in the natural. Right now, it is a very precarious time for Israel and the Jewish people. But I want to tell you, there is something supernatural behind the hatred of the Jews.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, just looking at the headlines on Drudge Report, which can be catchy, sensationalistic. U.S. leads mass walkout of Ahmadinejad's speech at U.N. Palestinians delay call for quick vote. U.N. chief urges Israel restraint. Obama reaffirms desire for Palestinian state. Brits won't say how they'll vote on Palestinian statehood. DNC chair says Jews will vote for Obama. Boy, there is a lot going on centered right now. The U.N., New York, Israel, the Palestinians, the world. There's also Durban 3 that was launched this week, which is supposed to be the UN's racism conference. But the first two have just basically been hijacked as anti-Israel, Jew-bashing conferences. A lot going on. The question I want to ask you is this. Is the hatred of the Jews like hatred of other peoples? Other people groups have been hated. Other people groups have been discriminated against. Other people groups have suffered through the years. Is there anything unusual, supernatural, diabolical, exceptional, above and beyond rational explanation behind Jew hatred or about Jew hatred, about anti-Semitism? Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. You'll also find there resources that are linked to today's show. I'm going to address the larger issue of anti-Semitism, Jew hatred, but I'm going to focus first, do my best to update you on what is happening in the Middle East, what's happening in the UN right now. I just want you to hear an audio clip. Unless you're an Arabic speaker, it won't do you much good, but it's very short, and I'll give you the background to it in a moment. This is Mahmoud Abbas. I'll tell you when he said this, where he said it, and what he actually said.
قدموا لنا شيئا معقولا. لا تقدموا لنا الدولة اليهودية. لن نقبل بها. لن نقبل بهذا الكلام.
Now, maybe you heard the Yahudia. Maybe you happened to catch that and you thought, Yahudia, does that have something to do with Jewish? Absolutely. This is Mahmoud Abbas, who is the leader of the Palestinian Authority, whose doctoral dissertation, as we mentioned in the past, even last week or two, was devoted to denying the full weight and numbers of the Holocaust. And Mahmoud Abbas, who's considered a moderate as compared to the leaders of Hamas, Mahmoud Abbas was speaking in Ramallah, August 27th, 2011. In other words, less than 1 month ago. And he was asking for, you know, give us something sensible. And he said, quote, official translation that I saw online, don't present to us the Jewish state. We will never accept it. In other words, talking to other Arab Muslim listeners, he's saying, let something be presented to us that's sensible, but don't present to us a Jewish state. In fact, as the Palestinian Authority would at this point accept observer status voted in by the General Assembly and recognize it may take longer to be recognized by Security Council for statehood, people have shown the logo that they had for observer status, and Palestinian state is all of what is now Israel and so-called occupied territories. In other words, there is no Jewish state in it. There is no Israel in it. And these are supposed to be the peace partners. Well, God loves those who identify as Palestinian and wants them to know his love as well. But it does not mean that there is justice and equality taking place right now. We'll be back.
Give us
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we're continuing to discuss the current status of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and the push for statehood by the Palestinians, which would violate the 1993 Oslo Accords, mandating the negotiations between them, obviously the United States serving as a mediator in those. But we're going to continue to look at that, but I want to talk more broadly about the subject of Jew hatred, anti-Semitism. Let me make this clear. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Our Facebook page is Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Okay, I want to make this clear. I solidly stand with Israel, not simply because I'm a Jew, but because I believe it is the right and just thing to do, and because I believe it's in accordance with what God has spoken in his word, and it's part of our spiritual obligation. However, I don't back every decision Israel makes. I don't back every decision Israel makes in terms of its Arab-Muslim neighbors. I certainly don't back many things in Israel, which is largely a secular nation, and the part of it that's very religious would militantly oppose someone like me, a Jewish believer in Jesus. I think some of the finest people in the world are Jews, and some of the worst people in the world are Jews. In other words, Jews are human beings, like everybody else, with good and bad qualities. So I am not out to defend Israel on every level. I am not out to defend Jewish people on every level. In many ways, I'm a critic of my own people, calling us to repentance and to turn to God and exposing what's wrong. So this is not someone with this idealized, oh, the Jews, oh, Israel, oh, I love the Jews. You know, those of us who are Jewish and in Jewish ministry, we meet many, many Christians who have a bit of an idealized, sentimentalized, glassy-eyed view of Jewish people. Oh, I have such a burden for the Jews. And we say, oh, really? Go live in Brooklyn for a year. Go live in Tel Aviv for a year. See what happens to your burden. It's not so pleasant, wonderful. Like, oh, you're here to love us and tell us about Jesus? Thank you. We never heard that before. We will all be in church on Sunday. Thank you. No, it's not necessarily going to go like that. So I recognize those realities. There's even the joke among Jewish believers, you know, that put on the lips of Christians, oh, to be with the Jews in heaven, that will be glory. To be with them here on earth is another story. So I'm not out to say that if anybody has a problem with the Jews, they're anti-Semitic, they're bad, they're... No, maybe they got bad relationships, maybe they got bad business deal, maybe they had a Jewish friend that wasn't nice. I mean, Jewish people are human beings, good and bad among us. That being said, there is something supernatural, something diabolical, something unique about Jew hatred. Do you agree with that? Do you think that there's something about the hatred of the Jewish people through the centuries that is different than the hatred of other peoples? Or do you think, no, maybe get more attention because of biblical history or something, but it's no different? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. So here's what happened thus far this week. Mahmoud Abbas, to a certain degree, has stepped back. Some, you know, who's going to jump first? Some say he did, or blink first. And that he said, okay, they can delay the call for a vote a little while, but they still want the observer status. So the full vote for Palestinian state would have to go through Security Council. U.S. has already said they would veto it. U.S. has also threatened to withdraw $500 million of support that it gives to the Palestinian Authority every year, $500 million. Saudi Arabia said, well, they will help out with $200 million, trying to offset some of the potential damages. Israel has said there'll be severe repercussions if they push ahead with this, which would just completely alienate and isolate Israel even more and just push and force more international division. But Palestinians said, okay, we're willing to step back a little bit and wait on this. So how it's actually going to unfold is still going to be very interesting. You just think of this. You've got in a few-day period Ahmadinejad speaking to the UN, Abbas speaking to the UN, Netanyahu speaking to the UN. How utterly wild. And what a reminder that God is the king. God is the king over the rulers of the earth. God is the king over the prime ministers. And that as much as people can make choices and as much as there is a real devil out to destroy, ultimately is God at work in the earth carrying out his purposes. But we play a role in that in prayer. If you don't know how to pray for the Middle East, pray this: Lord, your name be hallowed, your kingdom come, your will be done. I'm serious. Many times it's so complex and there's so many factors going on and you don't know, the thing that may look like the worst could actually turn for the best. The thing that may look like disaster may be the way God moves. It may be rough in the natural, but good in the spiritual. How can you even sort it out? Many times I've prayed that, oh God, your name be hallowed in Israel and the Middle East. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. President Obama, as he spoke to the UN, called on everyone there, Palestinians and Israelis, to step into each other's shoes and to see the world through one another's eyes. And you could see the Palestinians not being happy with that, because in their mind, they are victims only, and there are not two sides to the story, which is to me quite a shocker, but that's their viewpoint. And he said this, President Obama said this: let us be honest with ourselves. Israel is surrounded by neighbors that have waged repeated wars against it. Israel's citizens have been killed by rockets fired at their houses and suicide bombs on their buses. Israel's children come of age knowing that throughout the region, other children are taught to hate them. Israel, a small country of less than 8 million people, look out of the world where leaders of much larger nations threaten to wipe it off of the map. The Jewish people carry the burden of centuries of exile and persecution and fresh memories of knowing that 6 million people were killed simply because of who they are. Those are facts that cannot be denied. The Jewish people have forged a successful state in their historic homeland. Israel deserves recognition. It deserves normal relations with its neighbors. And President Obama made clear that nothing will bring a wedge between Israel and the U.S. Of course, he has been losing the enthusiasm and perhaps even some of the actual Jewish vote, but certainly the enthusiasm of the Jewish vote. He is widely perceived in Israel to be anti-Israel. Many Jews are greatly concerned about statements he's made, speeches he's given, call to return to 1967 borders, and so on. However, as much as I read these words, and I just didn't have the audio clip for this, that's why I read the words, as much as I read these words and was very positive hearing them, of course he was giving the Palestinian side as well in his speech, but to me, these words are very positive, and hearing him say this, you know, you can't deny the fact that 6 million were died, knowing that there are people sitting there, especially in the Muslim world and in years past in the communist world, that deny that 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust. He laid this out very clearly. Others have criticized him, interestingly, very upset with his speech, and saying that he didn't say the essential thing, because everybody's listening to every word here. Remember the depth of political maneuvering going on. That he did not flatly say, I acknowledge and recognize the Jewish state. Well, people say that was implied. That was implied, but when you're among people who deny it and say we won't recognize the Jewish state, others said that he needed to say that himself rather than say Israel deserves recognition. That he should have said we fully, completely recognize the Jewish state, the state of Israel. So he's been criticized for that. You can make your own decision. Governor Rick Perry, Texas Governor Rick Perry, Republican presidential candidate Rick Perry, delivered a speech earlier this week, a very pro-Israel speech, and he went after Mr. Obama very clearly as well. In fact, let's play audio clip number two.
We are indignant that certain Middle Eastern leaders have discarded the principle of direct negotiations between the sovereign nation of Israel and Palestinian leadership. And we're equally indignant of the Obama administration and their Middle East policy of appeasement that has encouraged such an ominous act of bad faith. Simply put, we would not be here today at this very precipice of such a dangerous move if the Obama policy in the Middle East wasn't naive and arrogant, misguided, and dangerous.
All right, very, very strong attack, strongly worded, with Jewish leaders standing behind him as he delivered that. I believe that has been his position. This is not something new that he just came up with, that he should be pro-Israel to get support. These are things I understand he has held to for some time. But his contention would be if not for our president and the current administration opening the door so much to Palestinian sentiments, pushing in such a clear direction, putting Israel under so much pressure. Remember, President Bush also wanted the Palestinian state, but approached things differently. They both say there's a two-state solution, but the way it's been gone about by our president has put Israel under additional pressure. And Governor Perry is taking him to task and saying, we would not be in the state that we're in today. We would not be in a state where the Palestinians, at that point, were going to be pushing for statehood, pushing for a vote this very week. We'll get a few more of his comments. By the way, if you've never heard audio of Governor Perry, that was Governor Perry, not former President Bush. I know both Texans, both sound similar. And yes, both say nuclear. Can you believe it?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire. I had not heard Governor Perry say nuclear, but Nancy was listening to him talking the other day and said he says nuclear like President Bush did. You have to imagine it's not unintentional, meaning someone certainly has pointed it out over the years, and either there's just been a conscious choice not to change it or an inability to change just so ingrained. I don't know. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to finish up our discussion about what's happening with the Middle East, with Israel, with the potential recognition of a Palestinian state. We're not getting into the whole question of the origin of the concept of Palestinians and so on. We're not even getting to the question of Palestinian Authority versus Hamas, but just to really focus on what's happening this week. And then as soon as we're done with that, I want to transition over to discussing the larger phenomenon of anti-Semitism. Again, I want to put out this question to you. Is there anything unusual about Jew hatred? Is hatred of Jews the same as, say, historic white hatred of blacks in parts of America, or Turkish hatred of Armenians in years past? Not Arminians, it's not Calvinist Arminian, but Armenian. Or just other ethnic groups hating other ethnic groups? Or is this different? Is this different? Is there something unique? Is there something unusual? Is there something almost supernatural about hatred of the Jews? I've given talks at years past to Columbia University and Yale University, invited in by Christian groups, and presented the unique nature of anti-Semitism, and then went through all of the explanations as to why it existed and saw that none of them connected all the dots. And in my view, there was something unique about it. There was something irrational. There was something supernatural about it. And I fielded questions as much as 2 hours from some very bright students and even others, faculty or grads, and nobody could put a dent in that thesis, but maybe you have some answers. Maybe you just see, no, nothing unique about it. Or, look, just Jews can be nasty, which others would say, well, you're being anti-Semitic to say that. That's a judgmental statement. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, let's just play a few more clips from Governor Perry's speech. He took issue with three or four current things in the Obama administration. And those that are new listeners know that this is not a political talk show. This is a kingdom-based talk show. We base things on scripture. We do our best to have a spiritual approach and bring a kingdom perspective on the news and what's happening. Thursdays, we focus on issues relating to Israel and the Jewish people. And many weeks go by without me mentioning the president's name, because this is not a conservative talk show out to bash the president. When I take issue with certain things, I do. And if I took issue with Governor Perry on things, that wouldn't be an issue to me, because I'm not Republican, Democrat in my orientation or in my identification on the show here. So those that are very much pro-Obama and take exception to these comments, hey, this is just part of our discussion. Don't take it personally. All right, we'll go to clip number three.
The Obama policy of moral equivalency, which gives equal standing to the grievances of Israelis and Palestinians, and including the orchestrators of terrorism, is a very dangerous insult. There is no middle ground between our allies and those who seek their destruction. America should not be ambivalent between the terrorist tactics of Hamas and the security tactics of the legitimate and free state of Israel.
All right, so Governor Perry there is saying very plainly, very strongly, that you cannot look at the situation with Israel and the situation of Palestinians and a terror-based attack on Israel and compare them, that there's no moral equivalency there. All right, number four.
Secondly, it was wrong for this administration to suggest the 1967 border should be the starting point for Israel-Palestinian negotiations. When you consider the suggestion of those borders was made on the eve of the Israel Prime Minister's visit, we see the American administration having a willingness to isolate a close ally and to do so in a manner that is both insulting and naive.
It's so... Again, very, very strong statements from Governor Perry. The call for the 67 borders was something I took tremendous exception to on the broadcast here for many, many reasons. And did that embolden Palestinians? Did that embolden Mahmoud Abbas to step forward the way he has now? Governor Perry would say certainly that was part of it. Go to last clip.
Now, thirdly, injecting the issue of the 1967 borders, in addition to a construction freeze in East Jerusalem and the Israeli settlements, the Obama administration put Israel in a position of weakness, taking away their flexibility to offer concessions as part of the negotiation process. Indeed, bolstered by the Obama administration's policies and the apologist at the UN, the Palestinians are exploiting the instability in the Middle East, hoping to achieve their objective without concessions and direct negotiations with Israel.
Yeah, I agree with what Governor Perry said there. As I said, as much as I appreciated the comments of President Obama to the UN in terms of recognition of past Jewish suffering and the tenuous nature of their time in the land, there are other things in terms of Mr. Obama's policies towards Israel that have caused me grave concern. And my gravest concern, yes, I have concern for Israel, but I always have concern for America. And there'll probably be some folks pointing out that as all this is going on, CNN reports U.S. stocks are plunging today with the Dow losing 465 points or 4% as nervous investors flock to the safety of bonds. U.S. Treasuries rallied with the 10-year yield hitting a record low. Others would say, oh, this is just something that's been going on for a while, and here we are in the midst of the process. Friends, we have lots and lots of free Jewish resources at our website. If you go to AskDrBrown.org, search the site, go to our Real Messiah site, go to our Think It Through site, go to the archives of our Line of Fire site, you'll find scores of hours, probably several hundred hours of free resources there. Take advantage of them. And this week, we have an important resource. It's not specifically Jewish related, but boy, is it relevant, about the spiritual realm, about spiritual warfare. Spiritual warfare means that our battle is spiritual. Our battle is not with people. We have a common enemy named Satan. He hates the Palestinians. He hates the Jews. We need to understand how the devil works. We need to understand how to do war against the powers of darkness. Understand how demons infiltrate and deceive. So we want to encourage you to get two series we put together this week, half price, plus we'll pay the postage. So it's just $20 for both on CD for your computer or MP3 player. Call us at 1-800-278-9978 for the two entire series, two complete series, 12 hours each. That's 24 hours of teaching on spiritual warfare and the spiritual realm, angels, demons, and deliverance. Very, very scripturally based. 1-800-278-9978. And hey, pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Haaretz reports from Israel. Durban 3 conference opens in New York amid allegations of anti-Israel bias. A counter-convention draws Jewish leaders and prominent supporters of Israel. 13 countries refused to take part in Durban 3. How is it that a conference that was supposed to be a UN racism conference dealing with issues of race and racism basically got hijacked by the enemies of Israel, and Durban 1 and Durban 2 were just Israel-bashing fests? Durban 2, 2009, held in Geneva, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad gave a speech in which he attacked Israel and denied the Holocaust. Come on. 2001 anti-racism conference was criticized for its harsh language against Zionism's racist practices, calling the Zionist movement one that is based on racial superiority. The draft document containing these statements prompted the U.S. and Israel to withdraw their delegations. What is it about Jew hatred? I've written about this over the years. I addressed it in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. I addressed it in my book, What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus, coming out in the new edition, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. I excerpted some of that, and it should be on Town Hall and One News Now websites in the next 24 hours or a day or two. What is it that is unique about hatred of the Jews? 866-34-TRUTH. Or you can differ and say there's nothing unique about it. I'll give you my little list in a moment, but first I want to hear from you. John in Washington, D.C., thanks for calling the line of fire. Yes, hello?
Hello.
John, go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Yes. I don't think anything worldwide could compare to the persecution of the Jews, as well as the Armenian genocide, which I've actually seen film footage of a missionary who went out into the desert where a million Armenians were marched in the desert to starve to death.
Mm.
And I think the Turkish government denies that to this day. But don't get me wrong, I respect Martin Luther King, but I think his dream has been turned into a nightmare by certain people with a specific agenda. And I don't mean to be harsh in that, but...
Yeah, well, let me just ask this, John, just to focus on the Israel-Jewish question. We know that many peoples have suffered tremendously, unimaginably. Tens of millions of Russians suffered under Stalin. And tens of millions of Chinese suffered under Mao. And several million Cambodians suffered under Pol Pot. And the Armenians suffered under the Turks. Do you think, though, that there's anything unique in terms of how universally Jews are hated in so many different places?
Sure. Satan.
Say, all right, so it's a simple, clear answer on that. And not to cut you off about the Martin Luther King issue and the others, that's a subject for another day, though, all right? But thank you for weighing in, John. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Patrick in Franklin Square, New York. Thanks for calling the line of fire.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say I do think it's different, the hatred that people have for the Jewish people. And, like, before I say this, I love the Jewish people. They're great. But you have to look at this. Well, when you think about it, they're the only people on Earth that everybody on Earth has either thrown them out of their country or had a problem with them. And when you think about it, even God was furious at the Jewish people.
Yeah, so
it's not the religion, it's kind of how they conduct themselves at a certain point.
So you think that getting thrown out of the countries and is because Jews are just a bit of a rotten bunch, maybe?
No, not that they're rotten. I don't know. It's just kind of hard to put it.
But you think it's their fault, though, that they've been kicked out of all the countries? Wow, we lost Patrick right in the middle of an important discussion here. Well, are Jews just suffering because they're bad? Or is there something more behind it? Is it Satan? We'll be back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, right before the break, we lost Patrick, and I want to give him one more minute. We have reconnected with Patrick, 866-34-TRUTH. We're asking the question, is Jew hatred different than other hatreds? Or is it just we're more aware of it, maybe because of Jewish history or Jews being literate and written out things more? And that's why we're aware of how Jews have been hated and persecuted in so many different places through the centuries. Or is just different. It cannot be compared to other hatreds, which are real and which are identifiable, but have rational explanations, whereas Jew hatred does not have a rational explanation. So, Patrick, just want to give you one more moment now that we reconnected there. Maybe you could articulate what you were saying just a little bit more clearly for us.
Okay, no problem. And before I get started, I just wanted to say I listen to you at least once or twice a week on YouTube. I listen to your debates all the time. You're great.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, our first, I went to West Hempstead High School, which is right near Franklin
Square.
Really?
Yeah,
and then when we were married, Nancy and I were married, the first apartment we lived in was in Hempstead, so.
West Hempstead, they were the Knights, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I played on freshman basketball, and then when it was time for basketball the next year, not that I was really any good, but I played on freshman basketball. Then the next year, when it would have been 10th grade, I didn't go out for it because you had to cut your hair to be on the team, and I was growing my hair long. It was the beginning of my hippie drug days, so I was not like a big sports guy at that point. But anyhow, yeah, back to – sorry for the reminiscing. Everybody else, sorry for the reminiscing. Okay. Yeah, you were saying, though.
Okay. I'll give you an example. You know what it is? It's not that the Jewish people are bad people. I think it's that their personalities, certain ones are very similar and they're very strong. Like what
like
happens when,
like argumentative, forceful, debating, opinionated?
Yeah, and like when the neo-Nazis have a problem with doing something, the first thing they usually do is get a Jewish lawyer almost to say, look what you guys are doing to yourselves. You will turn on yourselves for a little bit of money. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
all right, so that's your view. Hey, yep, all clear. I just want to give some other folks a chance to weigh in, but I wanted to let you clarify your point there. And thanks for watching on YouTube. Hey, if you go to my website as well, AskDrBrown.org, Real Messiah website, and some of the others, you'll find some more debates to listen to and watch. But thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. Charles in Washington, D.C., what's your take, sir?
Yes, this is Charles from Washington. Look, I'm an African-American. I'm 54 years old. And, yes, there has always been a natural hate toward the Jewish people. I've been to Israel 3 times, and I'll hope to be blessed to go again. I'm in total support of Israel as a Christian and a true believer. But you got to remember a couple of things. The Lord himself said, remember this, think it not strange. If they hate you, it's because they hated me first. So, and this kind of hatred has just gone throughout the history of time. It's totally spiritual. It's a totally spiritual fact. And we are in one of the gravest wars spiritually right now that the nation of Israel and we here in the United States are facing. Because we here in the United States are facing the same kind of hatred toward black people, toward our president. I want to make one point. Last week when they dedicated the grounds at Ground Zero, and everybody was harping on the mayor of New York City not allowing prayer to be invoked. When our president came up onto the podium, he did not say a word. He quoted from the Psalms. And when he finished quoting from the Psalms, he walked off the podium. But no one in the media has given rise to this, and no one in the media has given attention to this.
Hey, Charles, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Would you consider me someone in the media?
Yes, Michael, I do. But let me tell you something.
Because I brought that up last week that he read from the Psalms and I appreciated him reading from scripture where the mayor had banned clergy, that I appreciated that. I
and
said that.
No one in media or anywhere else, because we are over here. We have a president right now who we have people on the right and on the left who are determined that he will not do a second term.
All right, hey, Charles, just hang on 1 second. There was a previous caller who was about to say something negative about civil rights today, and it sounded like he was going to say something negative about African-Americans today, and I cut that off because I said that's not our discussion today. All right,
I understand.
Okay, so I just want to say this.
Between the two hatreds.
Yeah, okay, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your heart for Israel as well. The only thing I would say, though, Charles,
yes, sir.
And we can always discuss things about the president another day. I'm convinced, no matter who is president right now, with the economy and the situation that it's in and the decisions of the administration, if it was black, white, Asian, Hispanic, that this person would be under a lot of attack. But, Charles, appreciate your heart for Israel, and I appreciate your perspective. And I, in the media, someone in the media, on radio, and posting articles and so on, I did say I was glad to see the president bring scripture into the 9/11 memorial. But thank you for the call, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, Charles said, quoting the words of Jesus from John 15, if the world hates you, remember it hated me first. Don't think it's strange, would be 1 Peter 4. Here's the point. Jewish people are not being attacked because they're following Jesus, unless it's the remnant that is following Jesus. But there is that point that Charles would be making, that because God has chosen them out for a purpose to bring his salvation to the world, because of that, they're going to be targeted because they are involved in God's purposes, whether they like it or not. Karen in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Oh, it's good to hear this subject being brought up. Actually, I was talking with my husband about this, and I said this. So much similarities between the hatred that the Jews are going over, I mean, for centuries, with those that are in Palestine and Arabs, actually, and similar with what African Americans or people of color have gone through in America. I do understand what you're trying to get across when you say, is there a difference? Is there a similarity? Are they the same, or is this on another level? Now, I thought about it, and I said, because, like I said, we were having this discussion, and I was like, but the hatred, that form of hatred is so similar. It's the type of hatred that it makes no sense. There is no rhyme or reason for it. When it is spewed out, like a volcanic eruption, it's just everyone gets it. Let me say this.
I didn't have a chance to mention this to our last caller, but as a Jew, I've always felt a special kinship with African-Americans, and especially those in the Lord together, because of a history of persecution, because of a history of being slaves in the past. Even though so many Jews are in prominent positions in America, now, of course, many more African-Americans are, including our president. But in point of fact, I've felt that sense of solidarity. On the other hand, Karen, the difference, I would say, is the universal nature of this. For example, you have a continent, Africa, which is mainly black, with hundreds of millions of people living in that continent. Mm-hmm. And Africa is not universally hated in any way. And many Africans can go to other parts of the world and be accepted and respected, and yet Israel, this tiny little state of Israel, is universally hated. So there are some unique things, but absolutely certain parallels. Hey, Karen, remember October 5th, God willing, we'll be in Boston, actually in Malden, for a listeners' rally, hoping to meet all of you folks that listen to WEZ. That'll be, Wednesday night. Looking forward to seeing everyone, having a pastor's luncheon that day as well. But thanks for calling. Next couple of minutes, I'm going to share some of the unique things that I see in Jew hatred. But thank you for weighing in. I absolutely agree. There are many similarities in the irrational hatred that some have had to blacks in America, that some have had to other groups in other parts of the world. There are unique aspects as well. Terry in Miami, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, my name is Terry.
Yes.
I'm calling Dr. Brown because I have a question that's very related to what you're discussing. I don't agree with the gentleman who called who said that Jewish people are disliked like because of their character or their way of being, but he has a right to express himself.
Sure.
I know many lovely people that are Jewish, and, you know, I just do not agree with what he said, but that's fine. My question is that it's about the Holocaust. I have a friend who's a Christian who seems to know the word very well, and we were discussing the Holocaust, and his opinion is that God used Hitler, so that maybe the Jewish people would come to him. And in my opinion, I feel that Hitler has free will and he used his will for evil.
All right. And so I'll answer that question on the other side of the break. Thanks for calling, Terry.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We've been talking about Jew hatred. Is it unique? Is it different? I'm about to give you a short list as to why I believe it's unique and different. Others may differ with that, which is why we have talk radio, 866-34-TRUTH. Terry had asked right before the break. Terry's listening on the radio, which is fine. So, Terry, to answer your question, a friend of yours knows the word, said that they believe that God used Hitler and that part of it was to get Jewish people to come back to him or reestablished in the land. Terry said she believed Hitler had free will. I believe they're both true. Hitler absolutely chose to do evil. Hitler absolutely chose to destroy lives. Hitler was a tool of Satan, and Hitler, like every human being, and like Satan himself, can be used by God for God's purposes. People may make certain choices. God, then, being sovereign and all-wise and powerful, can carry out his purposes through those choices and can even raise up certain people or allow certain people to come to power for certain purposes to be carried out, as with the case of Pharaoh and the children of Israel in Egypt. So, that being said, I have no question that the Holocaust was a satanic act to destroy Jewish people. I have no question that there were aspects of the Jewish people not being under God's covenant blessing that opened the door to that, and therefore some aspects of judgment. I have no question that there were human beings doing human things, and I have no question that God worked through all of this to help reestablish the modern state of Israel. For more, for an in-depth statement, go to Volume 1 of my series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus and look at the question, why did God allow 6 million Jews to die in the Holocaust? Brent in Gresham, Oregon, we're a little short on time, so please dive right in.
I will. Thank you, Dr. Brown, for having taken my call. First of all, I want to establish a certainty. The truth is the truth, even if everyone denies it, and a lie is a lie, even if everyone believes it.
Agreed.
Okay? Okay, agreed. Okay, my perspective on the truth is like a smear in a window, okay? If, depending on the perspective, depending on your point of view, depending on how you're seeing it, you may not see it. You may not see the truth, but it's still there, okay? People want to deny the fact that Jews have been and will always be targeted for hatred, specifically because they are the chosen people of God. And this goes for Christians as well. There's a sect among Christians that do not believe that Jews can be part of the everlasting love of God. And it's just there's fighting amongst Christians. And when you have that, people that aren't Christians that might be persuaded to be Christians, look at that and see the infighting amongst us. And the hatred towards a people that are most definitely blessed by God, and take that to a new level. I think I agree with the last callers that hatred.
All right,
is
just to jump in, rabid. Brett, I appreciate the comments. And ultimately, as you say, truth is truth, whether it's accepted or not. A lie is a lie, whether it's accepted or not. Let me give you some reasons that I've laid out, and when I've lectured on this, I've gone into great depth. Again, It's in my books. There'll be a town hall article up on this shortly, as well as an article on One News Now on the unique hatred of the Jews. Let me tell you ways that Jew hatred is unique. It's the longest hatred of all time, as expressed by the Catholic scholar Edward Flannery, whom I often quote to this effect. Anti-Semitism is the longest and deepest hatred of human history. What other hatred has endured some 23 centuries and survived a genocide of 6 million of its victims in its 23rd century of existence, only to find itself still intact and rich in potential for many years of life? If you look at hatred of African Americans in America, hatred of blacks, there was a terrible season of that, and it was never universal in the country. And although there may be pockets of it, it has been largely eradicated, and yet 23 centuries, really longer, of Jew hatred. And sadly, it's alive and well today. For some years now, Jew hatred in the world has registered at the same level, anecdotally and through surveys of news and information, at the same levels it was right before the Holocaust worldwide. Secondly, anti-Semitism is the most widespread hatred of all time. You can find it from the Greek and Roman world to parts of Christianity, through history, parts of Christianity, Islam to fascism to communism, white supremacists, black supremacists, university campuses to the world press, philosopher Voltaire to the historian Arnold Toynbee, for the composer Richard Wagner to the car designer Henry Ford, from Japan to Russia to Iran, the most widespread hatred of all time. Third, anti-Semitism is the most vicious hatred of all time. Whatever the cause, say, of Islamic anti-Semitism, think that it manifests itself in such a way that an Islamic terrorist can break into the home of a Jewish man and his family and slit the throat and stab the heart of babies and three-year-olds and husband and wife, kill them in cold blood, and others are dancing in the streets over that. How can that be? And fourth, anti-Semitism is the most irrational hatred of all time. You know there are accusations that Jews control the Catholic Church? Article 17 of the Hamas Charter includes the statement that Zionist organizations under various names and shapes, such as Freemasons, Rotary Clubs, espionage groups, and others, are all nothing more than cells of subversion and saboteurs. The Masons are controlled by the Jews. So the longest hatred of all time, the most widespread, the most vicious, the most irrational. There's no logical explanation for it. All of the explanations people try to give, sociological and religious and economic, they only connect a few of the dots. Ultimately, we have to recognize that Satan wants to destroy the Jewish people because God chose Abram through his seed to bring salvation to the earth. It's not because Jews are better or worse. It's because of the purposes of God. As we talk about Satan, as we talk about the spiritual world, that reminds me to remind you about our special resource offer this week that many of you have already taken advantage of, but I want to encourage many more to take advantage of this. Where else are you going to get 24 hours of in-depth biblical teaching for just $20, postage paid, on two CDs for your computer or MP3 player? Our entire series on angels, demons, and deliverance, the spiritual realm, how demons operate based on Scripture, how deception comes in, our entire teaching on spiritual warfare, how we deal with the devil, how we deal with powers of darkness, how we put down the flesh based on Scripture, even the question of demon possession. Very enlightening, very practical, very edifying. Call us to order at 1-800-278-9978. If you'd like to help us with an additional gift in our Jewish outreach and Jewish ministry, I keep getting reports of more and more religious Jews, ultra-Orthodox Jews, whose hearts are being opened to the gospel. God's at work. If you'd like to help us with our work to the Jewish people, that's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978, or go to our website, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire for the resource offer, or click to become a monthly torchbearer. Hold our hands up together, friends. We are making a difference. My bottom line, yes, there is something supernatural about Jew hatred. Yes, there is a devil who is determined to wipe out the Jewish people, to destroy the state of Israel, and to take Jerusalem out of Jewish hands. The good news is there is a supernatural power far greater, the eternal God, who will accomplish his purposes among the Jewish people. We hear a lot of talk today about Messianic Judaism or the Jewish roots of the faith or the Jewish roots movement. Are these all one and the same? Are they healthy, unhealthy? We'll sort it out today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
When I got saved, 1971, as a Jew following Jesus, it wasn't through messianic prophecy. I didn't really know it existed. Maybe I heard a little bit about it, that the Bible talked about Jesus coming, and you know the Jewish scriptures talked about it. But it was my experience with God, transformation of my life, deep conviction of sin for the way I was living, revelation of God's love through Jesus that radically, dramatically transformed me. The idea of something called Messianic Judaism, the idea of the Jewish roots of the faith, was all foreign to me. All I knew was that Jesus was the Savior and the Jewish Messiah, and therefore Jews should believe in him and go to church like I was going to church. When I first heard about people who identified as Messianic Jews, which was some years later, I'm talking about, over 20 years later, I thought it was weird. I thought it was strange. I wondered, why do they have a picture? This is a magazine I saw that was put out by one group. Why do they have a picture of Jesus wearing a yarmulke? On the front cover of their magazine, yarmulke came in later. They didn't wear yarmulkes in those days, you know, the little cap, the Jewish head covering. Then, of course, as I studied, looked at things, I realized that the church in many ways had departed from its Jewish roots. So we want to talk about that today, this Thursday here on The Line of Fire, as we focus on Israel and the Jewish people. For those wanting updates on what's happening with the UN, you can listen to our first hour of broadcasting, which airs in different parts of America. You can go to our website, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. And for today's broadcast, that's always up just a couple hours after the show. You can listen to both hours free online or subscribe by podcast. The question I want to put to you today is this. We're not going to mention congregational names, okay, or names of leaders. But we are going to mention experiences, positive or negative. Have you been part or are you part of a Messianic Jewish congregation? If so, has the experience been positive or negative? And how has it been positive or negative? 866-34-TRUTH. Maybe you're Jewish. You can tell me if you're a Jewish believer in the Messiah or a Gentile believer in the Messiah. If you haven't been part of a Messianic congregation, but you've got questions, that's fine. You can call in as well. But I don't need you to call in and say, no, I've never been to one. I have no input. Oh, that's just fine. You just don't need to call us and tell us that, all right? So have you been part of a Messianic Jewish congregation or are you part of one? And if so, has the experience been for you positive or negative? Remember, we're not mentioning congregational names. We're not mentioning names of leaders, okay? Even if you love your congregation, we're not mentioning it. And if you had a negative experience, we're certainly not mentioning it. That's not the goal here, all right? And it's not that I don't want to talk truthfully. It's that I do want to talk truthfully and freely without having to wonder, are we accurately representing this group or that group? Maybe you had a negative experience somewhere because you're negative, or maybe you had a negative experience because the congregation's got some problems. The same with any church, same with any group, same with any denomination. What I want to talk about today is what's right and what's wrong about Messianic Jewish congregations. And I want to talk as broadly as I can, because every group, okay, every single group, every church, every ministry group, every denomination, any gathering of people in the Lord has things that are good and things that are bad. Has good qualities and bad. So we could do this. What's good and bad about Southern Baptist? What's good and bad about Holiness Church, Pentecostals? What's good and bad about this? So we're just looking at this constructively, but as broadly as we can, so that we can be edifying and clear. Stay with us.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. All right. We are talking about Messianic Judaism today. What is positive? What is negative? What has potential for good? What has potential for bad? Now, remember, we could do this with any group. We could do this with any organization. It's Thursday. We're focusing on Jewish-related things, because of which we're bringing up a topic that several years, I don't know, 3.5 years of daily radio, I haven't, or 3+ years of daily radio, I don't think I did a show just focused on, which is very important to talk about. 866-34-TRUTH, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. Ask Dr. Brown, ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Now, just a few terms here, okay? When I got saved, I didn't know terminology or how to refer to myself. Over a number of years, I felt the most accurate way to describe myself was a Jewish Christian. And I remember a professor of mine saying, "You're a Jewish Christian." To him was the best description. Now, for some, that's like an oxymoron. How can you be a Jewish Christian? Well, then you explain, well, Christian just meant a follower of Jesus. That's all it's referring to. You're born Jew or Gentile. Christian is a matter of faith, and so on. But, of course, to many Jews, sound like an oxymoron. The term before that was common was Hebrew Christian. The problem with that is that your average Jewish person doesn't identify as Hebrew. Are you Hebrew? Are you a Hebrew? So it's not the normal way that we identify, the normal way that we think. So Hebrew Christian could sound a little alienating. And then as years went on, Hebrew Christian generally meant churches that had a Hebrew identity or a Jewish identity, but were still primarily churches. So over the years, as the Messianic Jewish movement has grown to several hundred congregations, some just home groups, some with hundreds of people here in America, and has spread to many nations and is all over Israel, there have been two usages of the term Messianic Jew. Messianic Jew can mean specifically someone who attends a Messianic Jewish congregation that on some identifiable level lives a Jewish lifestyle. Or Messianic Jew can be used more broadly for any Jewish follower of Jesus. And for years now, I found that to be the simplest identification for someone trying to probe more deeply to say I'm a Messianic Jew. Now, I have some rabbi friends that say, well, they believe in the Messiah, just not our Messiah. They believe in the Messiah, too. They're Messianic Jews, too. But, well, fine. You have your terms already. You're already accepted as an Orthodox Jew, an ultra-Orthodox Jew, a Hasidic Jew, a conservative Jew, a Reformed Jew. We'll have our term, Messianic Jew. So it's used in the broad sense of any Jew who believes in Jesus. It's used in the narrow sense of someone who attends a Messianic Jewish congregation and lives on some level an identifiably Jewish lifestyle, whatever that would mean. That's another discussion. Now, we're talking in particular now about those who attend Messianic Jewish congregations. And there is many different stripes and flavors of Messianic Jewish congregations as there are any other group. In fact, it's very broad because they may be charismatic or non-charismatic. They may hold to Reform doctrine and be Calvinistic, or they may hold to Arminian doctrine and be Arminian. There can be so many other variables, but then they have certain distinctives. Now, there's also something called the Jewish Roots Movement. And much of that is what we mean by Messianic Judaism, but much of it is also fringe. Much of it is something that most Messianic Jews would not be at home with. So we have to often define our terms. So the fringe stuff, the flaky stuff, the stuff that departs from standard biblical orthodoxy is obviously not what I'm talking about. There are also other fringe groups, those that are engaged in what's called two-house theology, where they believe in some that Gentile believers are part of the 10 lost tribes of Israel, and many of them say that Gentile believers must be Torah observant as well. There are all types of different expressions. But for the most part, I'm talking about a congregation that identifies as Jewish but welcomes Jews and Gentiles together, that gathers not on a Sunday, but on a Friday night or a Saturday morning or both, that in their terminology would refer to Yeshua the Messiah rather than Jesus Christ. Not that you can't mix them, but that would be common there. And that there would be something identifiably Jewish about it, not just to draw people in, to try to get unsuspecting Jews in, lure them in, put up the Jewish symbols, put up the Jewish signs and lure them in. And then once you've trapped them, turn them into secret Christians and have them deny the Jewish heritage. No. No, in point of fact, most Messianic Jews that I know, or those who are part of Messianic Jewish congregations, would live the way they live and practice what they practice, regardless of whether there was another Jew watching or not, because it's between them and God. On the other hand, the church has strayed so far from its Jewish roots through the centuries. Come on, when a Jewish believer is not at home, say, with Christmas and wants to celebrate Hanukkah and people look at him as being divisive, or when you want to check out if someone's really saved, the Jew's really saved, give him a ham sandwich. I mean, this still happens. Or you know, if they say, hey, you know, we're meeting on Saturday. That's going backwards. That's divisive. Can you show me the New Testament where we're commanded to meet on Sunday? And I gladly meet on Sunday. That's not my issue. But the issue is when Jewish believers say, hey, we want to be faithful to our roots and we're just kind of reconnecting, or it's an effective way to identify with our people and it's healthy to do outreach, to say, yes, you can be Jewish and believe in Jesus. And we follow the biblical calendar. We're at home with that and so on. Why is that divisive? Now, there are certainly elements that are divisive. And there are elements in the church that are divisive. I mean, that's reality. We want to talk about what's positive, what's negative. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to the phones in a moment. There's an interesting comment from Drew. It was positive for sure. I felt like I was at church the way it was intended to be and totally Jewish, even for Gentiles. Steve said, I tried to visit one, but as a non-Jewish believer, I felt like an outsider. As my wife and I were actually stopped at the door and told the rabbi I was not receiving anyone at that time. It was not a positive experience. We'd not go back there. We would not go back there, but that could have been a one-off occasion. On that day, I would be open to others. And then, of course, they're Jews. They said I tried to go to a church and felt like an outsider there. So all very interesting, different perspectives. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to give you strengths and weaknesses as I see it. But again, let me say that if you sat down and discussed my home church, Fire, and said, okay, you're a leader here, a founder of the organization, tell me strengths and weaknesses, I could do that for you, okay? So this is not a show critiquing. This is a constructive show, just as any show that we'd focus on would be constructive. 866-34-TRUTH. Lawrence in Hollywood, Florida, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Michael. Shalom.
Shalom.
Listen, I was born and reared in Brooklyn, Borough Park, 13th Avenue.
All right.
In the heart of the Jewish community. I had Jewish friends, played a lot of stickball with them.
Yeah, you know what? You know what's funny, just to mention this for a moment? I didn't realize until I moved out to the east part of Suffolk County, you know, moved out a decent way out there, and we had students in. Right. We were in Stony Brook teaching at a Bible school in the mid-'80s, and we had students coming from different parts of the country. That's when I found out that stickball was a New York game.
Yeah.
I thought every kid across America played it, but it was not universally known. Yeah. But anyway, your experience in a Messianic congregation.
Oh, it was very nice years ago, but here's why I called. Uh-huh. The way I see it about the hatred for the Jews. It's not really anti-Semitic, because I'm anti-Semitic towards the terrorists. It should be anti-Jew.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just a term. We're talking about some of what we discussed the first hour.
The reason for it is, you got to remember, too, the nation of Israel, they were in idolatry, disobedience, unbelief. Again, if you believe that the triune God is sovereign, he put them in captivity with the Egyptians. The Syrians were against the Babylonians.
Right, so in other words, there's been aspects...
Let me just finish. Right, Persians, Romans, Hitler, even the Muslim terrorists.
Yeah, there's no question that we've had... Yeah, let me just jump in, Lawrence. There's no question that we've had our share of divine judgment as Jewish people. There is absolutely no question that we have had our share of divine judgment and have been chastised, and there's also no question that we have been hated by Satan. All right, thank you for calling, sir. But I just want to stay on topic here. Ed in Tampa, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, this is Ed.
Yes, Ed, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Yes, I've had experience in a few Messianic congregations, three in the Tampa Bay area. I've actually even tried to get a few friends of mine to attend, and they'll attend, but I think there's usually the two biggest stumbling blocks, and the reason they tend not to come back are, one is I do know that myself and a few others have found just the term Gentile very offensive. In our minds, at least the people I hang around with, Gentile would be like saying pagan. And when I attend a Messianic congregation, I don't want to be called a pagan. And then the other, I think, is we do hang around with a lot of friends that are very much associated with contemporary Christian worship music. And there is some very good music that has come out, Paul Wilbur and a few others that have come out with some really good music. But a lot of it has a lot of the cultural roots and sounds of Judaism. And
all right, got it. Okay.
I don't like to hear it.
All right, good. I appreciate the observations. I'll address them on the other side of the break. Thanks for the call, Ed.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Messianic Judaism, Messianic Jewish congregations. What's good? What's bad? What's right? What's wrong? We could do the same thing with any group, any organization, any denomination. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. First hour of the broadcast, we talked about the uniqueness of Jew hatred. After, we talked about what's happening currently with the bid for Palestinian state, UN, President Obama, Governor Perry, all that relevant stuff. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. Oh, a couple hours from now, you'll be able to listen to the first hour of the program as well. Our last caller said that he had positive and negative experiences in attending different Messianic congregations in Florida. You don't even have to give me locations, and certainly I don't want names, okay, even if it's been the most wonderful experience. But we only heard a couple of the negative ones. One was the use of the word Gentile. So in other words, he's now a Gentile believer. And in his ears, that's pagan. Now, let me say where I agree. Let me say where I disagree. I agree in that sometimes the New Testament can even use the term Gentile as for is similar to pagan. When this is how the Gentiles live. This is what the Gentiles do, meaning the pagans. On the other hand, the word Gentile is used in a totally neutral way, just meaning people of the nations. And Paul explicitly uses that term in Romans 11, talking to Gentile believers and saying, I'm writing to Gentiles. Now, they didn't say, who are you calling pagans? What are you calling us pagans? No, because he wasn't calling pagans. He was writing to Gentile believers and calling them Gentiles, just meaning people of the nations. There was nothing derogatory about it. And that's how it would be used if a Messianic Jew says, we welcome Jews and Gentiles here. It's not praising the one and putting down the other. So perhaps if you hear it in those terms and meditate a lot on Romans 11, that will work better for you. As to appreciating contemporary Christian worship style versus Messianic Jewish worship style, both are called Messianic Jewish worship style is going to have more Jewish-sounding music in it, sometimes more minor, minor key terms and the like. So those things can exist. Each one's cultural. First time to India, we're like, why are they using this demonic Hindu music? Well, it wasn't demonic. It wasn't Hindu. It was Indian. And the Hindus used Indian music, and the Christians used Indian music. We just had to realize, oh, okay. So yeah, that's just different tastes and different styles. I think it's good if we can expose ourselves to a wide range of worship styles and be at home in as many worship styles as possible. But yes, I understand that for some it would be too consistently, quote, Jewish sounding. I understand that. All right, this is, I guess not your last name, but Brown in Marietta, Georgia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey there. Just wanted to ask you with regards to the understanding of the scriptures. Messianic Judaism, I think, is really, really good. And it's great to see Jewish people coming to know the Messiah. And I am curious to a couple of things. The understanding that I have of scriptures, specifically Matthew chapter 23, verse 8.
Yeah, Yeah, let me read that to everyone. You are not, Jesus says, you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher and you are all brothers. Then he goes on to say, and call no man your father on earth, for you have one father who is in heaven. Neither be called instructors or teachers, for you have one instructor, the Messiah.
Right. And I don't understand the custom of continuing to do that in light of the fact that the Lord said to not do that. Why
right.
is it still being done?
Great question.
And that goes with even Catholics as well.
Right, calling the Catholic priest father.
You know, the father.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me
answer it the way I would, and then the way Messianic Jewish friends of mine would, who use the term rabbi. The way I answer it is, yeah, I'm not at home with being called rabbi. I'm not at home with being called father. Not that I'm a Catholic priest, so no one would call me that anyway. And I'm not at home with using clerical titles within the body. In other words, even though I do it as a courtesy to friends, I don't like when we put a title on someone. I'm Pastor Mike. In that same way, I don't like distinguishing anything with titles, be it rabbi, be it teacher, be it father, be it pastor. That's just my own what I'm comfortable with. On the other hand, people would say, no, it's the spirit of what he's saying. It's looking to a person rather than looking to him. It's exalting a person rather than looking to him. And they would say certainly people were called teachers in the body, and that's not an issue, and God raises up teachers, and yet it says don't be called teacher. So the Messianic Jewish response would be, this is how Jews relate to their leader. I remember one of my friends saying, hey, I've got old people in my congregation coming to me, old Jews, they just got saved. I'm their rabbi. That's how they relate to me. I was just at the funeral. They say, rabbi, we're so glad you're here. I'm not going to tell them I'm not. So I read it, sir, the same way you do. I always have. The Italian Pentecostal church where I came to faith, many of the people had come out of Catholicism, and they would never call a man a Catholic priest father based on that verse. So again, some would say it's the spirit of it. That's what Jesus is talking about. But Paul says to the Corinthians, for example, you may have 10,000 instructors. You don't have many fathers. I've become a father to you. So he identifies himself as that. It's simply a matter of emphasis. But it's hard for me to defend that because I read it the same way you do. You know, people would say, why do you allow yourself to be called doctor? Well, it's just doctor, mister, whatever. It's just, it's a meaningless thing to me on that level. But, that being said, I never, ever argue with my Messianic Jewish friends who are called rabbi and who lead their congregation as such, because they're not doing it to exalt themselves, but simply to be culturally sensitive and say this is how we're related to. But, sir, it's a fair question. I agree it's a fair question, and maybe we'll get one of my Messianic rabbi friends on the air to give his answer to it. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. I on a piece of paper here on my desk, have a little box, put a line down the middle of it, and put a list of, five positive qualities of Messianic Jewish congregations, potentially, and four negative qualities. I'm sure I could come up with a list of 10 and 10 or 20 and 20, whatever. But just gleaned a few of those. We're looking at some of the comments that folks have posted on the website. So if you'd like to weigh in with a comment, the quickest real-time way to do it is just to go to Ask Dr. Brown, our Facebook page, and post your comment there where I have answered that question. We'll come back, take a bunch more calls. And if you've never taken advantage of our Jewish resources on the Internet, please do. We have so many free hours of resources for you. And if you want to stand with us, pray for us, help us in different ways, become monthly supporters, which is awesome, our torchbearers, which are growing every day and are a tremendous blessing and just undergird what we do in ministry, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Donate button or the Torchbearer button, and then explore the website. Check it out. Go to Real Messiah. Go to Think It Through. Search for Israel, Jewish-related subjects. Go to Line of Fire and archive all of our Jewish-related shows. I'm talking hundreds of hours waiting for you. Free. There it is.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the line of fire. Have you ever been to a Messianic Jewish congregation? Are you part of a Messianic Jewish congregation? A congregation that seeks to reconnect with the Jewish roots of the faith. Probably meets on Saturday or Friday night. Says that seventh day is still the Sabbath, that the biblical calendar is still relevant, that you can be Jewish and believe in Jesus, Yeshua, at the same time. Are you part of a Messianic congregation? Have you attended a Messianic congregation? I don't want to know the names. I do not want to know the names. But was the experience positive or was the experience negative? How so? In what ways was it positive? In what ways was it negative? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. This, of course, is our day, Thursday, to focus on Israel and Jewish-related issues. And I thought, you know, I get so many emails about this. I hear of people who arrive at a Messianic congregation and thank God, they're home. It's wonderful. This is what they've been looking for all their lives. They may be Jewish, they may be Gentile, but this is what connects them and gets them excited about the Lord and His Word. I've heard of others that were following Jesus and thought, boy, I need to find out about Jewish roots, whether they're Jewish or Gentile, I need to find out about Jewish roots, started going to a Messianic congregation. And then over a period of time, I actually end up denying the Lord. Some Gentiles converting to Judaism, some Jews leaving Messianic Judaism, going to traditional Judaism, or just leaving any faith. We get the emails from both sides. We get every day questions, issues coming up. I mean, virtually constantly. So we're looking at this constructively. I want to repeat, I could talk about any group. I could talk about Calvary Chapels. I could talk about Southern Baptist churches. I could talk about Assembly of God churches. We could talk about anyone and say what have been positive experiences and what have been negative. That's just the way it's going to be because no group is perfect. No group has it all. And every group has strong congregations, weak congregations, etc. So we want to talk this through. And then I want to put down, give you a list of things that I see as the greatest potential strengths and the greatest potential weaknesses, recognizing that there are many, many different expressions within Messianic Jewish congregations, many, many different ones. I want to highlight the broad strokes as much as possible. 866-348-7884. Johnny in Palmetto, Florida, thanks for calling the line of fire.
Yes. Yeah, I attended several times to a Messianic synagogue and loved it. I was doing a Bible study one time, and we had questions about the Old Testament. And so I knew a rabbi, a friend of mine, who I was going to for references and everything. And he kept giving me answers that I was not getting in my church. Mm-hmm. And so when I would take him back to the pastor, he was like, oh, wow, that's a really good way of looking at it. Can mm-hmm. I meet this guy? So we ended up bringing the rabbi to our church, and he ended up doing a Sunday school class for me one time, and then he came in and did a Seder dance and really opened the eyes of a lot of the people at my church on the old ways.
All right, so in looking at Scripture through Jewish eyes, tying things back more clearly into Old Testament, giving a Jewish background to Jesus, maybe studying...
What he was doing, he was taking things out of the old, bring them to the new, back to the old, back to the new. And he kept showing me so many correlations between the old and the new. And he said, there's no way that there is not a Messiah out there named Yeshua.
Got it.
That most people should believe in him. And he just kept showing me all these references to the Messiah in the Old Testament. And then, like I said, when I brought him to our Sunday school class, they had so many questions there also. And they all walked away.
I've just got to jump in because we've got a break. But I understand it was enlightening, and it was digging into the Scriptures in more depth, which is something you'll often hear as a positive in Messianic congregations, often more in-depth teaching. All right, back with your observations, and I'll give you mine. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on this Thursday on The Line of Fire as we focus in on Jewish-Israel-related issues. Remember, tomorrow, you've got questions, we've got answers, anything on your mind you want to ask me about, things you want to challenge me about, we've talked about, that is a great day to call in. So get your questions ready. There's always limited time, but we get to as many callers and e-questions as we can. 866-34-TRUTH. Have you been part of a Messianic congregation, Messianic Jewish congregation? If so, was your experience positive, negative? I don't want you to name congregations, even if you have wonderful experience. You know, I'm just going to shout out to my, that's great, God bless you. But we're not naming congregations. And I want to say why. It's for a couple of reasons. Let's just say that I visit your church and I have a negative experience, but it's because of me. I'm a divisive person, or I didn't understand what was happening, or it was just an aberrant day. And then I get on the radio and I begin to tell you about thus and such place church. It's not fair to them. The other thing is this allows us to speak much more freely, positively or negatively, because we're not mentioning specific details like that. So if you've had experience in a Messianic Jewish congregation, to those just tuning in, I want to repeat, we can do this with any group. We can do this with any organization, any ministry, and give a list of pros and cons, positives and negatives. All right, so everything we're doing is being constructive and helping people understand what Messianic Jewish congregations are about and why they exist. Angela in Phoenix, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey there. Yeah, I'm still attending a Messianic congregation. I like it. I've had positive experience, but because of some things I sensed there, I went back to my other church and I'm attending Bible study there because I'm not sure how it's going to go with the Messianic congregation I'm at. So,
now what's been the most positive thing for you?
Well, the most positive, certainly, my kids love it. It's open expression in dance and music and just people like celebrating the Lord. Which,
yeah, and,
you know,
and for folks who haven't been to Messianic Jewish congregations, there is Jewish cultural dance, which becomes part of Jewish worship dance, which is very festive and can be very special, and many folks really, really enjoy that. All right, hey,
yeah.
Angela, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Barry in Raleigh, North Carolina, what was your experience?
Hi, how are you, sir?
I'm blessed. How about you?
Pretty good. I'm a Jewish Christian. The Lord Jesus Christ revealed himself to me, Shekinah Glory Light, in 1987 when I said, "Dear Jesus, please show me your real." I saw the cross sparkling. Now, what happened is I went to a Messianic party up north. It was a picnic. And one of the ladies said to me, "How dare you wear a cross?" Now, I'm the one of these people that love the truth. And I risked my life for the truth 25 years ago. And when I read my Bible, Paul said constantly, "God forbid I should glory in anything but the cross of Christ." And everything in the past is rubbish. So I care about people because I love people. And I like to see that they understand that the cross is a thing of beauty for those who understand its meaning.
Uh-huh.
So while people are trying to do their own thing, they're not listening to the Lord. And how do I say that? By what's in the scriptures. Because that Bible is best instructions before leaving earth. That's the only thing I can go by.
All right, so Barry, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Obviously, glorying in the cross, glorying in the crucifixion of Jesus, glorying in his death, his resurrection, and then we go to the cross and we come up in new life. That's what the scripture is talking about. The physical image of the cross, of course, comes later in terms of people wearing it rather than bearing it. So, can you understand? I'm not arguing with anything you're saying, okay? And we must be Jesus-centered. But can you understand that in some Jewish circles, because of the Crusades and Inquisitions and other things, that the cross as a religious symbol is a negative symbol?
Well, that might be true in what you're saying, and I understand your point. That's human logic. But my logic goes by what the scriptures say, and that's not the first thing. And, you know, if you read in the New Testament, Paul says many times it's all rubbish in the past. And now people can do whatever they like. because it says if in the book of 1 Peter chapter 4, if it's hard for the righteous to be saved, what will happen to the ungodly and the sinner? So I worry about people that they're not on the right path. If you don't have the Spirit of Christ, you don't belong to Christ. Being Jewish is wonderful. There's no question about it when you were born Jewish and you come to Christ. But the thing is, you have to understand, according to the Scriptures, what you're supposed to do, not what you want to do. And if you don't believe God's word or you want to deviate from it, perhaps that could be trouble for you when you leave this earth. I don't know. I'm not God. Jesus All doesn't right. come down every morning and say, hey, how are you? How are you going? How's things going? You know? But I go by his word. I've been reading 56 chapters a week since 1986, every single day.
Well, that's awesome, man. Hey, listen, let me get to some other callers, but thank you. God bless you, man, and keep glorifying Jesus.
God bless you, Dr. Brown, and thank you so much. It was nice hearing from you. Okay?
All right, good talking to you. Obviously, Barry from Raleigh, North Carolina, did not grow up in Raleigh, North Carolina. That is a New Yorker if I've ever heard one. Shirley in Atlanta, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
And it's certainly good to hear Barry, that New York accent, and just hailing, all hail King Jesus. And I got to tell you, I feel the same way as Barry. Years ago, in the 90s, I started going to a Messianic congregation. And then here recently, I've started to go occasionally to another here nearer to me. If I'm like Barry, I can hardly contain myself. I do see the glory in the congregation. But then I want to unzip them.
Well, how do you mean that? In what way are they zipped up?
Oh, I just want to say, please, spill out. It's your Holy Spirit that wants to worship the Messiah, to worship Jesus Christ.
Maybe there's too much of a...
They are zipped up.
So too much of a liturgical focus, or just too much focus on Jewish things that gets their eyes off Jesus?
Too much focus on the... On the manual, I don't know what to say about except I think Yeshua HaMashiach, the name is spoken many times, but not enough. And the name Jesus Christ, don't be afraid of it. It is what keeps you righteous. Who keeps you righteous.
Got it. All right, Shirley, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. I appreciate your passion. 866-34-TRUTH. You know, sometimes when you listen to talk radio, you get blessed by the host or frustrated by the host. Like, yeah, I agree. No, I don't agree. Well, then talk radio, the benefit is you can call in. It's the same way with our callers. You're cheering on one, and some people are jeering that one, and others are cheering another. So if you're frustrated, if you're like, why aren't they saying that? Or that's not fair. That's why the lines are open. You're like, you don't understand. I'm at work, and I can't. Well, I'm glad you're listening to me at work. That blesses me. So type me a message on Facebook. Ask Dr. Brown. Ask Dr. Brown. All right. Let me grab one more call here. Andrea in Marietta, Georgia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I visited the Messianic congregation for the first time in 2008 for the Rosh Hashanah service. I had just had a longing to, learn more about my Jewish roots. And I just discovered such a wonderful worship experience, and I learned about, I grew up Southern Baptist, so there wasn't really dancing in my childhood, and so that was, the worship is what drew me into the congregation, and it's been such a blessing, because there is something very special about the Jewish and Gentile together worship that I have not experienced elsewhere, that I just love.
Wonderful. Yeah, and many, many have likewise experienced that. I have the joy of being friends with a good number of the top Messianic Jewish worship leaders in the world, and some of the most sacred moments I've had have been in meetings with them, as there's sometimes a depth that I've encountered in some of the worship, a weightiness at times. And of course, I've encountered that in many other settings, and settings that are thoroughly Gentile, you could say. But each setting, each cultural setting, each biblical setting, each expression can have something unique about it. And I think you put your finger on some of that. Thanks for calling in. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, let me give one from column A, one from column B, from my positive and from my negative. Now, I am not saying what I like or don't like. I'm trying to step back in a larger assessment of what's healthiest and what's unhealthiest. And I can do that best in the things I'm closest to. All right. So on the one hand, Messianic Jewish congregations, as some said, teach the whole Bible, that you're going to get more of the breadth of the counsel of God. Now, you may go to a Calvary Chapel, for example, and it's the custom of the pastors to teach through the entire scriptures, whether it takes, they do it in a year or in 10 years. But many churches will avoid lots of portions of scripture because they don't see the relevance or it's not for today. There's the merit in many Messianic Jewish congregations of teaching the whole Bible much more effectively. On the flip side, there can sometimes be so much emphasis on Torah that it detracts from the emphasis of the New Testament. Okay, back with more.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us here on the Line of Fire as we talk about Messianic Jewish congregations, what's healthy, what's unhealthy. Again, we could do this, as I've said probably 10 times, with any group, any organization. We could step back and say what's healthy, what's unhealthy. We could do it with my home congregation. We could do it with my own ministry. We could do it with anything that we look at in a constructive way. 866-34-TRUTH. Have you been part of a Messianic congregation? If so, what was positive? What was negative? Now, I've seen comments as I've been reviewing my personal Facebook page and, more importantly, our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. Many positive comments, others mixed, positive and negative. I know many Jewish people that once they've gotten saved, finally found a home in a Messianic congregation. They just didn't feel at home somehow when Easter came or Christmas celebration came. It just wasn't part of their background, their culture. And yet they knew they couldn't go to a traditional synagogue that rejected Jesus. They'd far rather be in a church that knew Jesus and disconnected from Jewish roots. But then when they found a Messianic congregation, oh, I'm home. This is where I belong. I can be Jewish. I can follow Jesus without contradiction. Others have gone to Messianic Jewish congregations, and that was the first step on them actually falling away from the Lord, or some converting to traditional Judaism that were Gentiles. We've heard of that. So let me lay out what I believe are some strengths and weaknesses, okay? First, what I mentioned right before the break, that Messianic Jewish congregations are much more prone to teach the whole Bible, to be teaching through the scriptures more comprehensively, and often to bring the full depth and beauty of the Old Testament background to the new, bring that out more fully. It's an old church saying that the Old Testament is the New Testament is hidden in the old and it's revealed in the new. That's often found much more in Messianic Jewish congregations. On the flip side, sometimes there's such an emphasis on teaching Torah and being Torah true and trying to prove to the Jewish community how Jewish we are and how Torah observant we are, that it's very easy to get off base and lose our focus. A positive point, following the biblical calendar, recovering the value of that, recognizing that the holy days still have relevance, whether you observe them or not. We're coming into the season of the fall holy days here on the calendar, beginning with what Jewish tradition names is the Jewish New Year, the first day of the seventh month, which is coming up in roughly a week. Biblically, that was the sounding of the trumpet blast in this seventh month of the year. We're coming into that season. Whether you observe those days in a formal way or not, it's not the issue. And God certainly didn't command Gentile believers in particular to observe those days in a formal way, but to recognize this is part of God's redemptive purpose. And we'll get into that probably next week, the importance, the spiritual significance of the holy days. So the calendar has been recaptured, and it also identifies followers of Jesus with the rest of the Jewish community. On the other hand, a weakness, let me give you one more strength, the recognition that Jesus is Jewish. Isn't that wonderful? He was a rabbi, not a reverend. His mother's name was Miriam, not Mary. He was not the son of Mr. and Mrs. Christ. That's not why he was called Jesus Christ. He was not the son of Mr. and Mrs. Christ. So the recovery of his Jewishness, of his Jewish-based teaching, is very helpful and often enlightening and eye-opening. I laid this out in a number of my books. We've got the new edition now of What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus coming out under the title 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. That will be out, any day now, actually. I get into a lot of that Jewish background there. On the negative side, sometimes in a Messianic Jewish congregation, it's more Jewish than it's Messianic. There's more emphasis put on the Jewishness of Jesus than on the Jesusness of Jesus. What lousy English, but you get my point. In other words, you got to teach this Jewish background here and Jewish teaching. Well, what about exalting him as the Son of God? What about worshiping him as the King? What about just in an unashamed way preaching Jesus, Yeshua? Now, of course, many Messianic congregations do that wonderfully, boldly, clearly, with sensitivity and wisdom. But sometimes there's more of an emphasis on showing how Jewish we are and how Jewish he is and was than emphasizing his headship, lordship. Messianic Jewish congregations often have a greater emphasis on teaching in general and a greater hunger for study. I can tell you when I go out and speak, if we have a book table of materials, per capita they'll sell far, far more in a Messianic Jewish congregation than in a church setting because there's more of an emphasis on serious study and digging deeper. On the other hand, sometimes in Messianic congregations, there's a downplay on the importance of life in the Spirit and vitality in the Spirit. Getting the Jewish background to the scriptures is wonderful and helpful. As I said, enlightening in many ways. But if the focus is more on that than, say, reaching out to the lost, if the thought is, well, we'll just be Jewish and the lost will automatically get saved, it doesn't work like that. People get saved by us lifting up Yeshua in a clear and public and definite way. I was just encouraging a friend of mine who leads a Messianic congregation. And I'm thinking of Messianic leaders I know that have a great heart for outreach, a great evangelistic heart for our people. But I was telling him, as he and his group go out on a regular basis and do outreach unashamedly as Jewish followers of Jesus, I said, man, that is the lifeline, the lifeblood of your congregation. If you've never read my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, talks about the terrible history of anti-Semitism in the church and then lays out God's purposes for Israel and the Jewish people, I highly commend that to you. The book I just mentioned, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, which is an updated printing of the one that came out on the title, What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus? 5 volumes on answering Jewish objections to Jesus, 22-hour series on countering the counter-missionaries, all available on our website. Take advantage of that, or you can order most of the books at any online dealer. So that's askdrbrown.org. Go to the online bookstore. Remember, if you're a torchbearer, if you're one of our monthly supporters giving at least $25 to help hold our hands up as we reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and help fuel moral, cultural, spiritual revolution following the loving, compassionate principles of Jesus, remember you get 15% off on all of your online orders of any size, plus a new CD, a free CD every month, plus online access, free online access to our classes, which include Jewish Roots and Holiness and Revivals. You can watch the entire Jewish Roots class, all being a torchbearer, and it's just a benefit. So we want to bless you with that. And remember our special resource offers. We have a new one every week. 24 hours of teaching for just $20. If you love the teaching of the Word and want to understand what demonic activity and demon possessions, that still happened today. How do demons infiltrate? How do we do spiritual warfare? We're not fighting with people. How does this work? My entire series on spiritual warfare, my entire series on angels, demons, and deliverance, 24 hours of teaching. It's normally $40 plus postage. You can get it $20 today for the CDs, for your computer, MP3 player, and we'll pay the postage. But you need to call to order. That's 1-800-278-9978. This is our way of sowing into you as you stand with us. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978 or online at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the line of fire. My bottom line, it is absolutely wonderful to reconnect to the Jewish roots of our faith. It is absolutely wonderful to recognize the Jewishness of Jesus, Yeshua. In the process, let us not diminish his lordship, his greatness, his power. Let us worship at his feet as we reconnect to our Jewish roots and do the most Jewish thing we can do.